G8 and His Battle Aces, Squadron of Corpses, by Robert Hogan, Chapter 11. Killer's Bait. TAC. 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 A hail of bullets rained about them from the ships that swarmed down from the blinding light. It was as if there were a dozen suns in the sky, and the glare of each held an enemy plane. G8 spun around to see what his two battle aces were doing. They were staring at him, waiting for a signal. Instantly G8 made up his mind. There might be a bare possibility of getting back to the lines. It was their only chance. He kicked the controls, waved signal to Nippy and Bull to follow and pointed toward the south. Tack. 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 Those enemy planes had other ideas. They were down on G8's own level now. He could see them plainly. Even more plainly could he hear the angry drumming of Spandau lead on his tail section. A surge of sudden anger raced through him. Why didn't they have gas enough? Why couldn't their bullets have held out? His hand plunged into the holster at his side and he jerked out his automatic. He slithered his plane to the left, straightening just as the leader of the enemy flight swerved to the right with a final, but futile, burst into G8's right wing. G8 saw the pilot plainly, saw him pointing down. And then his hand pointed toward his guns. So, they were demanding the instant surrender of G8 and his battle aces. Well, the Heinies would have a fight on their hands, before they gave up. G8 took aim with his army automatic as the enemy plane, a Fokker, drew level with him. Blam! 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 In the light of the flares he saw the leader of the flight jerk forward with a convulsive movement and grab his rudder. Then the Fokker plunged earthward. Thrilled by the success of his chance shot, G8 whirled and motioned Nippy and Bull on behind him. Tack! 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 Hurling in a wild, twisting course, G8 yanked over in a tight vertical and plunged for the rest of the enemy flight. A desperate chance. A wild bluff. Tad tad tad. Those were Bull's guns blasting out in a burst that was all too short. That told the story of his guns, out of ammunition. Then to G8's horror, the enemy planes dropped their noses still lower, and came hurling on with murder in the flaming points of their guns. From the way they flew, G8 could tell that they would crash his three SPADs, head on, rather than permit them to get back to their own lines. Tad tad tad. The fire from those Spandau guns was the hottest the master spy had ever faced. Those German demons were shooting directly at the twisting, struggling SPADs. Then, with shocking abruptness, he heard one of the engines behind him sputter and stop. He spun around and stared, moving his controls to hurl toward the north, out of the line of that deadly fire. Big Bull Martin and his plane number 7 were turning over in the first flop of a tailspin. Tad tad tad. G8 felt the drum of Spandau steel on his fuselage now. But he was going down to aid Bull. Part of that Fokker flight stayed with him. The rest broke up to follow SPAD number 7 inches its twisting course to the earth. G8's heart was pounding like a riveter's hammer. He couldn't figure out whether Bull's twisting course downward was from loss of his ship's control or was done on purpose. His motor had stopped, that was certain. Perhaps a slug had gotten it. Or perhaps he had just run out of gas and had gone into a spin to get out of the fighting. G8 frantically hoped it was the gas. He raced down to be with Bull at the landing, or at the end. Blam! Sput! Sput! The sound that came from G8's own engine told him the truth. His gas was gone. He held his plane in a dive and continued to go down. Out of the corner of his eye, he caught sight of Nippy. The little terrier was twisting and turning, going down too. There were no spurts of flame from his exhaust stacks. His motor was dead. Frantically G8 searched the earth below. Lo! The Fokkers seemed to understand their plight. They ceased firing and one came nearer to G8 cautiously. Probably remembered the fate of their leader. He motioned down, and he, too, tapped his gun. G8's teeth clenched. But he nodded. There was nothing else to do. When the flares had settled, well below their level, Bo was in the fifth turn of his spin. Suddenly he straightened, plunged and came out with hardly 500 feet altitude left below him. He was headed straight for a small field, which showed plainly in the dimming light of the flares. G8 scrutinized the country about the field. They would be down on Germany, trapped. Their planes would be surrounded and captured. But they must get away. They must learn more about this weird voodoo trap, which was beginning to look like a scientific accomplishment, instead of a supernatural one. A wood skirted the north side of the field, and stretched north for the distance of nearly a half kilometer. There, in a clearing, stood a small frame building. He could see the roof of it in the light of the fading flares. Wood stretched all about it. With that in mind, as a possible hiding place, for the moment, G8 hurled on down. Bull had already landed. Nippy was coming down beside G8. The flares were growing dimmer every minute. It became harder and harder for G8 to see his way into the field. But he made it. The last flare went out just as Nippy's wheels rumbled to a stop. G8 leaped from his cockpit. His first impulse was to fire their planes to keep them from being captured by the Germans. Tack. 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 From the south end of the field came the deadly rattle of machine guns. Brilliant searchlights flashed out across the meadow, to hold the Spads with their three Yank aces in the glare. Not a second to lose. G8 shouted to Nippy and Bull, "Come on, this way. I spotted a place we can hide." This last was in a lower voice. He raced toward the north and the wood. They would hide them, if they could reach it. Nippy and Bull caught up to him. They were running across the field, half-doubled, not saying a word. Machine gun lead trailer whistled and screamed, sang a death song around their heads. Behind them they heard the pounding of heavy boots. The Jerrys were hot on their trail. Funny, that those lights should be set up and ready when the Yanks landed. Perhaps that was part of the trap. Queer, that the whole field wasn't surrounded, but perhaps it was. G8 couldn't know that yet, because he was still at least 150 feet from the edge of the woods. Half the German army might be lying there and wait for them. "Grab your guns," he hissed. "If we're being ambushed, we'll give them some of their own medicine." They ran a few more steps in that crouched position. Then G8 hissed again. "Split up. Zigzag as you run. It won't be long before we know what's up." They raced on. The awful suspense of not knowing was fairly curling the hair along their spines. Then they reached the woods. Nothing happened. That stillness, when they had expected an attack and plenty of fighting, was almost a disappointment, but only for the instant. They plunged into the woods. The undergrowth hid them from the glare of the searchlights behind. G8 stared back. He could see men coming, silhouetted grotesquely against the lights. The Yank planes were already surrounded. They pushed on through the wood, picking their way more carefully. They were in the dark once more. Then, for the first time, G8 asked the question that had been uppermost in his mind since they had landed. "You all right, Bo?"
"Okay,"
answered the big fellow. "Just ran out of gas and had to come down, that's all."
"That's enough," said Nippy.
"That's what happened to me and to me," G8 added from the air. "I saw a building in the middle of this woods. Looked like a little, old barn. We may be able to hide there."
"We've got to find some way to throw these heinies off our track. We'll have the whole German army on our tails, if we go too far."
The sound of voices and the flash of lights died away behind them. G8 grinned as he pushed on through the dark trees.
"I think they have lost the trail," he panted. "They don't think we're dumb enough to go straight into the woods. Likely they figure we've turned either to the right or the left."
Then, suddenly, they stepped out into a clearing. The stars and the moon showed them the little frame building. Dry twigs and branches snapped and crackled as they approached the deserted house. They came on it cautiously, guns in hand. No telling what lay in store for them here. Bull poised in front of the loose-hung door of the building. His foot came up and he kicked it in. Not another sound. They went inside. There was a faint scurrying noise. Then all was still.
"Rats,"
hissed G8. "How I love them." G8 struck a match. By the light of it they surveyed the interior. The boards under their feet creaked. Many of them were loose. Apparently the place had been used as a barn or stable. There were two stalls in one corner, with mangers. Over the partition was thrown a pile of filthy, torn horse blankets. In another corner of the little stable was a wooden watering trough. A wood pipe entered it and kept it full of clear, spring water.
"Well," Nippy observed, "we may starve to death here, but we won't be apt to die of thirst."
"No," G8 agreed, "if they haven't poisoned the water. But I doubt whether the Germans would poison water on their own side of the lines. There wouldn't be any object in it, unless the match had gone out." They were in the darkness again.
"Unless what?"
Nippy ventured.
"I was just thinking that this whole thing might be a trap. But there would not be much point in that, either,"
G8 said. "They could have surrounded the field and caught us right there."
"That's what I can't figure out," Bull's voice came out of the darkness.
"The way they were lined up against the south side of the field made me think of a deer drive. Just like we used to pat on in hunting season, back home. Wheelchair hunting, I always called it."
"There's one thing that sticks me," came G8's voice. "I haven't yet been able to figure out why that corpse didn't drop when you flew directly over it, Nippy. You must have hit one of the wires that held it. But it just kept on going straight up toward the cloud."
"Hey," growled Bull. "Talk about something cheerful, or else light a light. I've got goose flesh all over me."
"Boy, that's a lot of goose flesh," Nippy chuckled.
"If you could only sprout feathers out of those pimples, you'd be the answer to a pillow manufacturer's prayer."
"How about those wires?"
G8 reminded him.
"Oh, those," Nippy grinned. "They had me befallowed too, for a minute or so. You see, I was shooting right over the tops of those corpses, thinking perhaps a chance bullet might cut those wires. I was concentrating over the center and, as you know, nothing happened. Then I got sore and I made up my mind I'd fly through the wire. I thought perhaps I'd just happen to miss them with my slugs. So, I flew through and got the surprise of my life.
So did I, admitted G8.
Then another idea popped into my head. Those corpses were lying perfectly horizontal. I figured perhaps two wires held them, one from the head and one from the foot. You remember, they were strung out in a straight line just as they had been picked from the fire.
I knew that those wires must be pretty well apart.
I've seen a few wire tricks in my day and there are lots of ways you can work that stuff.
I couldn't figure the whole thing out then, but now, since we've seen that it was a zeppelin in the cloud, I've got it.
It's a good trick.
They strung the wires that fastened the feet of the corpse from the front of the zeppelin. The wire that held its head came from the stern. Therefore, the wires would stretch at a wide angle from each end of the corpse, leaving enough space for a whole ship, perhaps more, to fly through without touching either one of them.
Get it? Not a sound came back to him. It was as though he were alone in the barn.
I said, did you get it?
He repeated.
SH, G8's voice hissed.
I heard something.
Listen.
To be continued.